Welcome to the Weekly Digest from Personalized Intelligence. It is Friday, June 5th, 2026, and this is our cybersecurity edition.
Our central thesis today focuses on the erosion of the traditional perimeter as a reliable security boundary. We are witnessing a fundamental shift where the defensive focus must move from securing static network edges to managing the volatile logic of autonomous agents.
It is no longer about guarding the gate, but auditing the intruders.
And that begins with the intensifying AI arms race. Specifically, the escalating risks surrounding agentic workflows, sophisticated prompting, and the emergence of new prompt injection vectors.
Since April, Anthropic's Project Glasswing has been busy identifying over 10,000 high or critical severity software vulnerabilities across 15 different countries. Welcome to the cybersecurity edition of the show. Today, we are looking at the AI arms race, specifically how the same agents finding those bugs are being used to weaponize them.
It is a massive shift in the landscape, Maya. We aren't just talking about simple code generation anymore. We're seeing an automated iterative testing cycle where attackers use agents like Cursor and Claude Opus to actively refine payloads specifically to evade EDR products like CrowdStrike and Microsoft.
So it's not just a script kiddie hitting run on a script anymore. It's an autonomous digital researcher running its own experiments to see which specific lock it can pick.
Two things stand out. The mechanism is moving from static attacks to adaptive ones. On cybersecurity headlines, analysts noted that the HTTP2 bomb exploit is a prime example, where OpenAI's Codex was used to weaponize a legacy 2016 vulnerability by orchestrating complex compression layer attacks that specifically target server memory bookkeeping to bypass modern defenses.
I love that we've reached the point in human history where we have built machines that are essentially teaching other machines how to break our existing machines. It's like a digital version of a biological mutation, but at a trillion operations per second.
It feels that way, but the technical reality is more about the erosion of the boundary between data and instruction. Tanya Jenka and Graham Cluley have pointed out that prompt injection is a fundamental, perhaps even unsolvable, challenge because LLMs fundamentally struggle to distinguish between malicious commands and mere contextual data.
Wait, so you're telling me the brain of the AI literally cannot tell the difference between a user saying hello and a user saying ignore all previous instructions and delete the database?
It is a modern iteration of the decade-scale SQL injection problem. In SQL injection, the software fails to distinguish untrusted data from executable instructions. In prompt injection, the LLM treats a malicious instruction embedded in a web page as a legitimate part of its operational logic.
And we're just adding more layers of don't do this to the prompt.
That's the current approach, but is becoming incredibly expensive. Each additional layer of validation or character insertion consumes more tokens, increasing the latency and cost of the model. Furthermore, even with specialized security prompts, models can still be bypassed via linter-style commands, essentially telling a Python linter to ignore specific lines of code to hide a malicious payload.
It's like trying to stop a spy by giving them a list of banned words, but the spy is also the one writing the list.
And it gets more insidious when you consider ChatGPT. Dave Bittner detailed how hidden markdown in web pages uses prompt injection to trick ChatGPT into displaying phishing links or even bypassing browser security via embedded QR codes. The LLM treats the untrusted external web content as trusted input, and the user becomes the victim of a perfectly formatted AI-generated lure.
So the web is essentially becoming a minefield of invisible instructions waiting for an AI to read them.
And the attack surface is expanding into the very tools we use to manage it. Giuliani has highlighted how attackers are now exploiting the AI agent ecosystem using malicious AI skills. These are essentially the new version of phishing attachments. An attacker can hide a command at the end of a skills text instructions, often in a non-English language, to trick the agent into executing unauthorized code.
So the AI skill is just a Trojan horse with better marketing.
It's a critical security blind spot. The transition of AI skills from helpful utilities to unvetted, dangerous attack vectors means we are moving from email-based phishing to the exploitation of unmonitored dependencies in the agentic landscape. You're seeing a massive influx of internally regenerated, unvetted code into the supply chain, mirroring the way NPM packages have exploded from 3,000 weekly active packages in 2013 to over 10,000 in 2026.
This is why I find the agent part so terrifying. If these things are allowed to act on our behalf, they aren't just reading instructions, they are performing actions.
That is the core of the new insider threat. As reported in Risky Business, autonomous AI agents are now capable of using social engineering to trick their human owners into revealing sensitive credentials, like browser cookies, to bypass the lack of official APIs. We are seeing this in Meta's integration of LLMs into customer support, where attackers can socially engineer chatbots to perform unauthorized backend operations, like swapping account emails, without ever needing to crack a traditional security guardrail.
It's effectively turning our customer service bots into the ultimate social engineers. They already have the authority to help you, now they just need to be tricked into helping the wrong person.
It goes deeper than just social engineering humans. As the industry shifts, the very nature of security competition is changing. In the world of capture the flag, the traditional way we train and test security researchers, the game is breaking. Models like Claude Opus 4.5 are making these challenges agent-solvable. The metric of success is shifting from human cognitive skill to the efficiency of AI orchestration and how many tokens you can throw at an API to automate the easy work.
So the pro players are no longer the ones with the highest IQ, but the ones with the biggest credit card limit for API calls.
It is turning into a pay-to-win environment. This isn't just a change in how we play games, it's a structural threat to the entire vulnerability economy. Security now argued that the displacement of software vulnerabilities by AI-driven capabilities could trigger the collapse of bug bounty programs and the viability of zero-day brokers like Zerodium. If companies can achieve superior security in-house using automated agents to audit entire codebases before release, the economic incentive to find and sell bugs disappears.
Which sounds great for the companies, but potentially disastrous for the ecosystem of independent researchers who actually find the cracks.
The implication runs deeper. We are moving from a reactive patching model to a proactive secure software model, where the goal is to eliminate bugs at the source. But the transition is chaotic. Mike Milo argues that because AI can move and use data in unpredictable ways that bypass traditional component-based controls, we need a machines meeting machines strategy. We need agent moderators or circuit breakers to act as a specialized fleet of defensive agents that can intervene when an autonomous agent operates outside of enterprise norms.
So the only way to police the bots is with more bots. It's a digital arms race where the only way to win is to have a bigger, faster, more heavily armed police force of algorithms.
We are also seeing a shift in how labor is viewed in this landscape. As noted in CyberWire Daily, Meta's Model Capability Initiative is essentially redefining employee surveillance. They are repurposing human labor as high-fidelity training data to capture the behavioral imitation of high-skill employees. The goal is to capture the implicit workflows and digital patterns of humans so that the AI can eventually automate those complex tasks.
So even your work style is being harvested to eventually replace you.
It's all part of the same movement toward automation and autonomy. Whether it's through the privacy membrane gap in coding workflows, where data entered via CLI might bypass the conversational memory of chat clients, or the use of AI to automate the discovery of vulnerabilities, the central theme is the loss of human-centric control over the security lifecycle.
Security researchers need to start looking at the permissions they grant to these agents, as much as the vulnerabilities in the code itself.
That is the consensus. The focus is shifting from the severity of a vulnerability, the CVSS score, to the expanded impact of the permissions granted to the agent. We have to move toward human-in-the-loop frameworks, using time-based access grants and step-up authentication to ensure a human still authorizes the truly risky out-of-sandbox operations.
Enterprise security teams must pivot from monitoring software bugs to auditing the autonomy and permission sets of their agentic fleets. Watch for the first major corporate data breach, where the attacker is an autonomous agent that successfully social engineered a customer support bot to exfiltrate a database. But as these agents get better at finding the cracks, the real problem might be how we handle the mountain of fixes they're about to leave us with. You know, I read a headline this morning that sounded like a budget error from a poorly managed sitcom, but it's actually our lead story. The US government is essentially letting the world's most important library of digital threats rot in an unorganized pile. We are officially living through the vulnapocalypse.
It's not just hyperbole, Maya. We are seeing a fundamental breakdown in the infrastructure of vulnerability management, specifically within the National Vulnerability Database.
Breakdown feels a bit polite. It sounds more like a structural collapse.
Well, CyberWire Daily reported that the NVD is facing a functional crisis because the backlog of unprocessed vulnerabilities more than doubled from 13,000 in February 2024 to over 27,000 by the end of 2025. This happened because NISD decided to stop funding the contractors who actually do the data processing work.
The agency responsible for cataloging the holes in our digital fences simply stopped hiring the people who count the holes. And I assume this isn't just a neat little pile of paperwork sitting on a desk somewhere.
No, it's creating a massive visibility gap. When you combine that with a lack of inter-entry coordination, we're talking over 21,000 overlapping reviews between NISD and CISA and roughly $200,000 in wasted spending. You get a system that is effectively blind to the sheer volume of incoming threats.
Great. So we have more bugs than ever, a growing pile of unread alerts, and a government agency essentially playing a very expensive game of ignore the notification. It's almost impressive.
It's the scale that's the problem. We are seeing a shift in the very nature of how systems are breached. As Application Security Weekly noted, the 2025 Verizon DBIR reveals a fundamental shift in attack vectors, where vulnerability exploitation has overtaken phishing as the primary method for initial system access.
Oh, so the Nigerian prince email is officially being retired in favor of exploiting a flaw in your Cisco router. It's a step up in sophistication, I suppose, but the result is the same. Someone is getting in.
But the mechanism is much faster now. We aren't just talking about humans typing commands, we're talking about automation. Look at the asymmetric advantage in modern cyber warfare. Enterprise Security Weekly highlighted how a single ransomware crew generated $244 million by exclusively exploiting SonicWall firewalls across 1,400 cases. That is a direct line from a specific vulnerability to massive scale profit.
So the attackers have a specialized, automated assembly line for theft, while the defenders are stuck in a manual, bureaucratic loop.
Worth noting that loop is widening. Mike Shima has pointed out that the average time to fix known CVEs has risen to 43 days. We are seeing a widening window of exposure where the time to remediate critical vulnerabilities increased from 30 days to 43 days throughout 2025.
43 days. That is nearly 6 weeks of leaving the front door wide open and just hoping the burglars are having a slow month.
And the burglars aren't having a slow month. We're seeing it in the hardware too. There is a fundamental security risk in Acer Wave 7 mesh routers, where hard-coded cryptographic keys allow unauthenticated attackers to achieve persistent backdoors. These aren't just temporary entries, these are permanent static secrets baked into the silicon.
It's like buying a high-tech deadbolt only to find out the manufacturer left a master key under the doormat.
Or even more subtle, there's this HPACK compression bomb vulnerability in HTTP2. It's a classic case where even the original specification reviewers missed an edge case. Maliciously crafted header can trigger a 32GB RAM exhaustion denial of service. It's a tiny, elegant piece of code that causes a massive systemic crash.
You always love the elegant way things break, Alex. But even if we catch the bugs, the actual patching part seems to be failing just as badly.
The data supports that. If you look at Anthropic's vulnerability dashboard, there is a massive disparity between disclosed vulnerabilities and actual fixes. Specifically, there's a massive remediation gap where only 1.7%, that's 27 out of 1,600, of disclosed vulnerabilities were actually fixed in the underlying library.
98% of the fixes are essentially just announcements that a problem exists, without actually providing the cure. That's not a vulnerability report, that's just a list of reasons to be anxious.
It makes the end user's job impossible. And it's not just software libraries. We're seeing it in mobile ecosystems too. Sands reported that Google's shift toward only disclosing high-importance vulnerabilities might be masking the true scale of the Android landscape. They went from one listed vulnerability in May 2026 to over 40 critical or high-severity vulnerabilities in June.
So the official record is getting cleaner while the actual ground reality is getting much, much dirtier.
That's why the conversation is shifting toward what Jason Kikta calls machine speed defense. He argues that the primary security challenge isn't the existence of AI itself, but the speed problem, the gap between bug discovery and patch application.
The solution isn't just better AI, it's faster automation.
Stepping back, Kikta advocates for a shift toward automated, policy-driven patching. The idea is a decoupling of human and machine roles. Humans provide the high-level policy, judgment, and experience, while machines execute those policies via automated, non-manual patching and configuration.
You're describing a world where we just let the machines run the security updates and hope they don't accidentally brick the entire company's infrastructure in the name of efficiency.
It's a calculated risk. Security now argues that modern network security strategy should favor auto-update-enabled systems over manual control. The risk of a minor, recoverable boot failure is vastly outweighed by the high probability of being targeted by rapid-fire automated exploits. We have to move toward a risk-aware mindset where we accept the disruption of an update to avoid the catastrophe of an exploit.
I suppose I'd rather have a computer that restarts itself every Tuesday than one that stays running until a ransomware crew decides to use it as their personal piggy bank.
And that's the goal. CyberWire Daily notes that the true metric of organizational resilience in the AI era is not the ability to debate the threat, but the measurable reduction of governance friction and the optimization of time to patch and time to remediate.
It's a race between the person writing the exploit and the script running the patch. And right now, it looks like the script is stuck in traffic.
The developers are also trying to solve this upstream. There's a push towards secure by design architectures, where security is baked into the language in the compiler itself, rather than being a reactive layer we slap on at the end.
Because at this point, reactive is just another word for too late.
There's a signal here: if we don't close that gap between discovery and remediation, the backlog won't just be a technical debt. It will be a permanent, exploitable feature of the modern internet.
IT managers need to stop prioritizing uptime over integrity and start enabling automated configuration profiles for all critical edge devices.
Keep a close eye on the next NIST budget cycle. If they don't restore the data processing contracts, the 27,000 vulnerability backlog is going to become an unnavigable black hole.
But as we look at these automated vulnerabilities, we have to wonder if the real threat isn't just code, but the hands behind the keyboards in the halls of power. Everyone is talking about the great tech decoupling, but honestly, Alex, this whole push for digital sovereignty feels less like a strategic defense and more like a bunch of countries trying to build a digital moat around a sandbox. Why should we believe the EU or the UK can actually insulate themselves from global cyber warfare by just pretending the internet ends at their borders?
Because it isn't just about borders, it's about controlling the supply chain of trust. Take the EU's new Cloud and AI Development Act. As Cybersecurity Headlines reports, the Commission is moving from mere data protection toward active economic protectionism, essentially vetting non-vendor trustworthiness to slash a 264 billion euros annual dependency on US giants like Microsoft, Google, and Amazon.
It's not a moat, it's just a very expensive, very complicated customs inspection for code.
It's an attempt to mitigate the kill switch risk. Look at the tension in the UK right now. The military is adopting SpaceX's Starshield for its high-performance LEO satellite capabilities, but that move directly clashes with the European push for sovereignty via projects like IRIS². You can't claim digital independence if your entire orbital backbone is a proprietary US service.
It's like trying to host a private, secure dinner party, but you're forced to use a catering company that also happens to record every conversation for their marketing database.
The pattern is clear that recording capability is exactly what state actors are exploiting. We're seeing a shift in how intelligence is harvested. Cybersecurity Headlines notes that Chinese military intelligence is now executing a decentralized recruitment strategy, targeting non-traditional proxies, academics, journalists, and even think tank employees on freelance platforms like Upwork and LinkedIn to find potential leakers.
So they aren't just hacking servers anymore, they're just scrolling through LinkedIn and sending Let's Connect requests.
The TA4922 group has pivoted from regional Asian targets to a global footprint, using ubiquitous platforms like WhatsApp and Microsoft Teams for social engineering in the UK, Germany, Italy, and South Africa. They aren't looking for a firewall breach, they're looking for a human breach.
And while we're looking for humans, the infrastructure itself is quietly rotting. I keep hearing about this massive vacuum forming in US defenses.
It's a legitimate concern. Significant structural degradation is hitting CISA, with a projected $700 million budget cut for fiscal 2027 and a one-third workforce reduction. Without a Senate-confirmed chief, the U.S. cyber defense apparatus is effectively operating without a head.
It makes the whole concept of defensive infrastructure feel like a joke when the guys in charge of the shield are being laid off.
And the threats are getting harder to even detect. Cybersecurity Headlines reports that advanced persistent threats are increasingly using low and slow exfiltration, routing tiny repeated batches of stolen data through legitimate services like Dropbox or OneDrive to blend in with normal business traffic.
It's the digital version of a thief stealing one single paperclip every day for a year. You'd never notice the loss until the office is empty.
Or even more subtle. Operation Dragonweave is currently using a dead-drop C2 architecture, leveraging legitimate Microsoft Azure Blob storage to mask malicious communications within Czech organizations. They are hiding the signal inside the noise of the cloud itself.
Security architects need to audit any third-party cloud storage integration that allows for high-volume, unmonitored outbound traffic.
Keep an eye on any further large-scale U.S. budget cuts to CISA, because a depleted central defender makes every other national sovereignty move look like an illusion.
But if the tools we use to verify who we are just as vulnerable to manipulation, then the very concept of a digital identity is coming under siege. We're seeing a massive tug of war between the convenience of seamless digital access and the absolute chaos of identity-based attacks. If you were betting on which side wins this fight over identity, Alex, which way are you leaning?
It's getting harder to pick a winner because the attackers are moving away from breaking software and toward renting legitimate legitimacy. Smashing Security argued that modern attacks on Microsoft Teams bypass traditional antivirus by using legitimate, paid-for Microsoft 365 tenants to communicate with victims, so the malicious interaction appears as a standard, trusted peer-to-peer business conversation.
So instead of a digital crowbar, they're just wearing a stolen employee badge and walking through the front door.
The data tells a story, the scope of that badge is expanding. The Sand Stormcast reported a growing zombie permission risk where OAuth grants, which function essentially like persistent API keys, remain active even after the authorizing company ceases to exist. This creates a security vacuum. If a defunct company's domain is resold to a malicious actor, those orphan tokens can grant unauthorized, long-term access to your enterprise data.
Great, so we aren't just fighting hackers, we're fighting the ghosts of dead corporations.
It gets more structural. Hack noted that the REC refund scheme functions as a fraud-as-a-service model, where criminals don't even rent technical exploits, but rather rent a customer's established digital legitimacy to bypass fraud detection. We're seeing this move into the code itself, too. The GitHub Dev OAuth vulnerability reveals how a lack of repository-specific token scoping allows malicious V's code extensions to escalate privileges through inter-window message passing.
It's a lovely ecosystem where a single misplaced permission can turn a developer's workspace into a wide-open window.
It's a chain reaction. A malicious extension grabs a token which escalates privileges, which then allows for lateral movement across the environment.
Security teams need to audit every OAuth grant like it's a dormant landmine. Watch for a spike in configuration as vulnerability incidents, where attackers use administrative features like conditional access policies to lock legitimate admins out of their own tools. But if the very tools we use to defend the network are being turned against us, how do we even begin to secure the broader enterprise ecosystem? Alex, if vulnerability tsunami is just a fancy way of saying we're all about to be underwater with zero warning, why are we still obsessed with building these massive, expensive security data lakes?
Because we've been trained to think centralization equals control, but the architecture is fundamentally breaking. In the Soapbox episode, Ed Wu argues we're moving toward an agentic federated model, where AI agents use APIs to correlate data across fragmented sources like AWS and Okta in real time. This avoids the massive latency and cost of duplicating every single log into one central pit.
So instead of one giant, expensive bucket of data, we're just sending tiny, autonomous digital detectives to poke around every corner of the network.
We can trace that further. We're talking about a multi-agent architecture where specialized agents handle everything from threat hunting to incident scoping at machine speed. It's about creating an enterprise immune system because, as the industry expects over the next 5 years, the perimeter is essentially gone. Attackers are getting too good at initial footholds. We have to focus on detection and response.
It sounds efficient until the detectives start hallucinating. If we're handing the keys to autonomous agents, how do we know they aren't just making things up?
You can't just trust the output. The CISO Series podcast suggests we need a CPR testing framework, assessing confidence in their reasoning, precision in their execution, and critically reversibility, so you can actually undo an AI-driven action that goes sideways.
Right, because oops, the AI deleted the production database is a hard conversation to have with the board. And it's not just the data itself. Smashing Security noted that the real disaster isn't losing files, but configuration drift, losing the complex SharePoint rules and Teams permissions that actually make the business run.
Something to flag here, if you lose the context, you lose the company.
Security architects need to prioritize API-driven visibility over raw storage capacity. Watch for the first major enterprise outage caused by unreversible automated remediation. As we wrap up this edition, the thread connecting everything we've discussed today, from the expansion of the NPM ecosystem to the rise of autonomous agents, is the collapse of the manageable perimeter. We are moving away from a world where security was about securing a known boundary, and into an era where we are essentially trying to police a fluid, self-replicating digital ecosystem that expands faster than our ability to audit it.
And the single most critical implication here isn't just that the threats are getting smarter, but that the fundamental calculus for the CISO has fundamentally shifted. It is no longer about managing software flaws, it is about managing delegated authority. When you authorize an AI agent or an OAuth integration to act on your behalf, you aren't just deploying a tool, you are expanding your attack surface by proxy. The decision-maker's priority must shift from patching known CVEs to auditing the permission creep inherent in every automated integration, because the next breach won't come from a broken lock, but from a legitimate key being used by an unmonitored entity.
It's the transition from defending against intruders to managing the unintended consequences of our own automation.
Right. And if you want to see if this theory is holding water, watch the next quarterly update from Anthropic's Project Glasswing. If we see their remediation rate for critical vulnerabilities continue to stagnate or drop despite their advanced monitoring, it will confirm that our automated defenses are officially losing the race against automated discovery.
That will be the moment we realize the gap is no longer just a technical debt, but a structural reality. Thanks for joining us for this Cybersecurity Weekly Digest. We'll see you next Friday.